Welcome to the Tri-Town Advice Givers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to bringing the Tri-Town and surrounding area residents the best advice from our brightest minds. My name is Mark Borst, your host, and today we're in the Tri-Town Advice Givers Studio in St. John, Indiana, with Keela Parkinson of Kiki Productions, otherwise known as Coach Kiki.
Okay.
All right. Hi, Keela, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
So to start off, I always just ask about you. Like, are you from the region, family-wise, whatever you want to share or don't want to share is
okay.
Fine, but...
No, actually, I'm a small town girl. I grew up in a tiny town called Yorktown in central Indiana, just outside of Muncie. Went to Ball State, go Cardinals. And I grew up there. My family were one of the original founding families. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, and for the first time ever, there are no Parkinsons in the town of Yorktown because my parents just moved. So,
oh,
so yeah,
wow.
For the first time since the town's founding. But I do have family there still, and I do go back and visit. And I went to Chicago after college and then met my husband, who happened to have a home in Northwest Indiana, and that's how I became a region rat.
Gotcha.
And right. I've been here for 15 years.
15 years. That's kind of cool about the Yorkville?
Yorktown. Yes.
The family history of it. So was that something that you guys had always known, or did it, like...
Oh, yeah. There was kind of a homestead. There had been a couple of homesteads for the family, and there had been, you know, just farming and that kind of thing. And by the time my grandfather's generation came around, there wasn't as much farming. His parents actually forced him to go to college. They forced him, which is pretty funny when you think about that.
Yeah.
And he did not live on the family homestead. My great-grandmother stayed there, and she passed away when I was 15. And at that point, my great uncle, who owned it and hadn't lived in the state even for, you know, decades, he sold it because he got a better deal from somebody outside of the family who wanted it. My dad and his brother had wanted to buy the property and divide it up, and my uncle was like, "That's not really profitable." So I mean, those things happen.
Yeah.
We were like, okay.
That's still a cool story, though.
What's really cool is this family that bought the house, they're very gracious to us because my uncles, my sister, they'll go back sometimes and they'll want to see what's happened to Grandma's place. Mm. And they'll be like, "Hey, knock, knock, knock. Can we come visit and see what's going on?" And the family's been very gracious to be like, "Okay, sure."
Right. I guess it's one of those things, as long as you don't push it too hard.
Yeah, right. It doesn't happen but every maybe 5 to 10 years.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, that's cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, so let's jump into Kiki Productions.
Okay, what do you want now?
How long you been doing it, and what was the motivating factor for you to start it?
So I've had this coaching practice here in Northwest Indiana for about 8 years, and I want to say that I sound really stopped up right now. I just have to say it because it's there. It's like the elephant if I don't say it right. So I apologize to listeners that I really sound super nasally. But I started this coaching practice in Northwest Indiana about 8 years ago, and I started it because I had been speech coaching in Fortune 500 as a freelancer, and I had been going around the country mostly writing speeches and then also coaching people on their delivery. And what I loved doing the most was seeing people get over their nervousness, because it was usually engineers or VPs or sales professionals who were just kind of placed into this role, like, okay, we're doing the internal awards presentation and you have to thank so-and-so. And they'd be like, "Oh no," but it would be like a really big production. You know, they have like a theme for the awards show and they have all these elements, these staging elements. These guys would be up in front of lights on a stage with, you know, confetti in their hair,
the whole
whatever,
night.
Right? Yeah. And they'd be like, "I'm just an engineer. I don't want to talk to anybody," you know? And so it was really fun to be able to hold their hands and get them over the nerves. But that wasn't really part of my job description. It was just something I happened to be good at and like to do. So when it came time to, in 08, when the bottom kind of dropped out around here and around everywhere for a while, I was like, you know what? I'm really tired of freelancing and being on the road, and what could I do that I'm good at that I could just start a business? Because I thought now was the perfect time to fail if I'm going to, you know, right? So what's the risk? And so my husband was like, "You're doing what now?" And God bless him, he stayed on board. And I just decided, like, I really want to coach people and have like a longer relationship with them and Coaching was very nouveau at that point. It was very urban, and there was really nobody doing it in Northwest Indiana. So, I mean, there were a few people who had been consulting for a long time and were kind of moving into the coaching realm too, but that was it. So,
yeah,
so it was fun.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
All right, so that's actually a great story how you got started. Why don't you just kind of go into what it is you're actually coaching or your typical client?
Yes, okay. So my typical client is a small business owner or a sales professional who knows they have some sort of block to success. Now that sounds super vague, but specifically what I'm looking at is maybe like processing emotions, mad, glad, sad, scared, something gets in the way. Basically, it's fight or flight that trips you up, right? So confidence gets lowered, the decision-making kind of gets stuck. There's some area where this is a factor. I help people gain confidence through brain-changing exercises that cycle them out of fight or flight. And so it's something that every human can use, but not everybody is at a place where they want to recognize it, work on it, you know, do that kind of work that it takes to make the change. But if you are, then communications coaching, which is exactly what I do, is great. It's a kind of a merging of life coaching and business coaching because I like to shine a spotlight on whatever the communications problem is. If you have it at work, you have it at home too. And it's probably something that's followed you around for most of your life.
That's interesting that if you have it in one spot, it's
so true,
transfers
right?
over.
It just becomes like a liability somewhere, you know, you can usually deal with it at home and then like it becomes a liability somewhere else. So what happens for me a lot of times is I'll wind up coaching somebody because maybe they have a sales quota to meet and they're struggling with making cold calls because they've always had some sort of phone phobia or whatever. And so, you know, we talk about what happens for them there and then they wind up saying, oh yeah, this is an issue at home sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. This is an issue when I was dating. Now it's an issue with my fiance or whatever. And then they wind up coming to me and saying like, could you coach my spouse? And I go, well, only if they want it.
That's funny. So the communication stuff, I mean, I think we're all a little bit hesitant in public speaking or any of that
right,
stuff.
The number one fear in America, supposedly, right?
Yeah.
You'd rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy kind of thing.
Right, right. And I know I have that fear too. One-on-one.
Okay.
Great. But, yeah. You know, more than 20 people.
And then look what you're doing. Awesome. Right?
Yeah. 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 It is
pat
part
yourself
of that,
on the back, right?
Part of that fear thing. So it's all about speech giving on the communications or?
So not necessarily, right?
Okay.
So like anytime that fight or flight comes up at any point in the sales cycle for people, whether it's overcoming objections, picking up the phone, cold calling, maybe even talking to a team if you're new to your management position or new in your ownership position, or maybe speaking to your superior if you're not, right?
Okay.
These are kinds of these areas where it can come into play in the workforce. And so it doesn't just have to be getting out in front of people giving speeches. That's a big area, of course.
Yeah.
Because especially business owners can really grow their businesses by being willing to take opportunities like yours, right? Like being on a podcast or giving a presentation in front of a networking group or the Chamber of Commerce or, you know, the local chamber has this 30-second commercial spot, right? And
sure.
All you have to do is sign up for it and you get it.
Right.
But you have to stand in front of a microphone in front of hundreds of people at the luncheon.
Right.
And they ding a bell if you go over. And so it's really like this high pressure situation. And most people are like, I would rather die than get up there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so easy. Just do it. Right.
Right.
Because I'm actually an introvert. I mean, I said I grew up in a really small town. I was very shy in my small town. I had like 7 friends growing up. And I just liked my friends. And, you know, I was nice to other people, but I was like very, very shy. They had to say hi to me first. You know, if I saw them and I knew them, I would just sit like, you know, with my head down, like just, okay. And so when I started giving my presentations, that shyness came back and I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to do this because I'm teaching people to be confident. So how am I supposed to be confident? So I was my hardest coaching client, right?
That's
that's
the best way to learn something though, is to teach others.
That's how I can say that all the tools that I teach people work because I have to use them. And
right.
I do use them. And I actually really enjoy giving presentations. I enjoy that camaraderie with the audience. I enjoy like seeing how big of an audience I can feel like I can hold a whole room. Like I find it a challenge. It's very fun. But I've changed my brain chemistry around it, you know?
Right.
And so, but I still get really nervous. It's part of my process. And I have things to convert nervousness into excitement because they're on the same spectrum, which is really kind of cool.
And I think the nervous is a human nature. I don't think that you will ever be able to get rid of that nervousness. It's just like you just said, it's how to handle it and how to deal with it.
Tony Robbins supposedly never gets nervous anymore. He finds that laughable, you know. But I mean, I think you can get there. I think you can get to a place where you can really be very zen with life and like see all problems as challenges that you can solve and get very, very resourceful. I think that you can actually do that. But I think that it takes like a Tony Robbins kind of personality to do that with a huge team that you pay really well.
I was going to say, and lots of money too. So if he says something wrong, then it doesn't matter to him. So, yeah. And I've never heard him say that, but that, that's interesting.
Yeah, I just watched this documentary on him called I Am Not Your Guru, which was very, very interesting. It was all about like this very specific live event that he does and the kind of interventions that he does. Yeah. And it was cool to me because I was like, oh my gosh, I do exactly what Tony Robbins does, right? Just one-on-one in a private setting instead of a room full of thousands.
That's cool. And I did watch that, but I didn't pick up on it. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you were listening for
totally
stuff
listening
like that.
For that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So for the average business person, what point in the business cycle do they need help? Is it before they start a business? Is it 6 months in? Is it 5 years in? Like, where do you find the best like fit?
So I have been in all those places. I have come in all those places. I think I was telling you before we started the interview about a former client of mine who I saw her kind of give birth to this dream. She was working somewhere else and she was not really enjoying what she was doing. And so part of bringing me into coach her was like, how do I get some passion around this? How do I get some energy into it again? You know, there were some other things we were working on specifically when it came to cold calling and that kind of like meeting quotas and that sort of stuff. But it was also like, I don't really like this. And so I said, let's just work on both things, right? Let's work on getting you to meet these numbers and find some joy in it and make it a game for yourself and like finding some passion and victory. And let's also like envision what your dream life would be, right? And like, this person is very successful now, right? She's really like, I mean, I told you like some of the successes she's had, like getting her product into Whole Foods, right? So, hi, April. So, I mean, I got to see this kind of develop, right? And so that was really, really very exciting. And so I've coached people where they've had this inkling of this idea, but it's come from, I really don't like what I'm doing. And I'm like, well, what would you like to do instead? And to see that grow has been really cool. And then that usually there's a longevity for me with a client like that, right? Because then they start to fill a team, you know, when they launch their new business and they get new problems that are communication oriented.
Sure.
But I've certainly had people who have been in business for a long time. Maybe they're going into a new market and they're saying, oh my gosh, I'm really scared about this. I feel like a newbie again in my industry because I've never attacked this market before. Or maybe they're growing their team, or maybe they have a team for the first time. They're in that place, right, in their position. And so they don't know how to communicate with them. Or maybe they're starting to do more teaching to their team and they're having regular meetings and they're like, I don't feel like they're listening to me. I'd like to bring in an authority and do workshops, right? And so that could be a good fit too. So I've worked with people at all levels, basically. Yeah.
And I'm sure you can be effective in all those different things, getting to the next level. And that's really about, it doesn't matter what level you're at now, it's getting to the next level.
It's really, that's what it is.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you mentioned team too. So you'll go in and coach the whole team versus just one individual?
And what I often do is we call them workshops. And for me, they're really group coaching sessions. So I make sure that there is some sort of like someone volunteer, right? And so we have kind of that microcosmic Tony Robbins moment, which is like an intervention, right? Like right there.
Right.
But it's basically just teaching them how to do these exercises and showing them that it can work. And then what I try to do, I don't know if he does this or not, honestly, I've never been to a Tony Robbins event, even though I think he's super cool. But what I try to do is I try and make sure that everyone in the room has empathy for what the person is going through. And I thank them for being vulnerable in front of us, you know, and after they've done that kind of whatever the work is and learning the exercise and learning how to change their brain in that moment. And you know, sometimes it's like something like role playing, but we try and go deeper than that because that can be very gimmicky and it can be a very short fix. And so I try to give them tools that are lasting. And the other thing I do is I give them homework assignments, which I don't think they're expecting from a workshop.
Yeah.
But I want them to like actually start to practice, you know, the material and make some baby step changes in their lives.
Right.
And then a lot of times if I'm being hired by an employer to coach a team, they'll say to me like, you know, here's the weak link and here's the star seller, and not in those terms necessarily. And, you know, these people could get some coaching, like to reward the star seller with some coaching and say, what does she or he really want to do next? And I'd like to help the weakest link, you know,
right,
kind of get in there. And so I usually wind up coaching oftentimes the manager and the top and bottom sellers.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So, and I've heard you a couple times reference personal stuff. So it's really, even though you're in a business environment, it's really a lot deeper than that.
For sure. Yeah. It's, I've had a couple of different times I've had clients who routinely introduce me to people as, this is my therapist. And I'm like, I am not a therapist. Let's get that very clear. I will be in big trouble if people think I'm saying I'm a therapist.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they feel like it's therapy. And it's, I mean, in a way, the type of coaching that I employ, it does use psychological concepts. And there is a growth component that is very specific to, like, you're trying to change your brain chemistry, overcome trauma, if that's an issue, whatever. Change those, you know, brain responses to whatever that might be. Because we're specifically dealing with fight or flight. So those are the things that will come up to people. And so a lot of times it's deep stuff that comes up for them. And it's a very safe, confidential place to talk about it. And then to have something to do to change it. It's different than just like the old talk therapy model. So I think that's why coaching appeals to a lot of people too.
Yeah. So is there a point where you feel like a person, I guess they're not willing to change, or they're in a spot where they're just stubborn and...
Yeah. It's fascinating because I have a lot of coaching colleagues, because now coaching is very in vogue and people do it all over the place. And there are tons of coaches in Northwest Indiana now, which is fun for me because I get along with everybody that I've met in the industry. And we're sort of what I term co-peditors, right? Where you say like, here's my ideal client, and other people may not really get what that means. And so you refer, you know, if someone, so there are people that I don't like to work with. I look for red flags in the way people are talking. I actually have a coaching eligibility quiz on my website, and there are certain questions there that I will see as potential red flags, like that show just a lack of willingness to change. And so then I'll have a conversation where I'm looking for more red flags and trying to gauge their readiness, basically. Typically, though, the people who come to me, like I've already kind of tweaked my language to really seek out that ideal client. Mm-hmm. And so when they do come to me, they're actually usually pretty excited and like, I really, really want to change, or I've been trying to change this my whole life. And I'm like, my like wits end, and I'm desperate in a way.
Tried
I'm
everything.
Like, that's great because you really want to change. Right. So you're going to at this point. Mm-hmm. But I do know other coaches who have this chronic issue of clients who won't change and won't change and won't change. And I have only had one experience with that. I had one client whose company was paying for her to change and basically just never did the homework. Right. And I finally just came to her and said, you know, I don't think we can work together anymore. And I mean, because to the company, coaching wasn't working. And I was like, well, I'm working my butt off, you know, but this person isn't. So I had to kind of share that. And then I wound up coming up with a tool that I feel like really changes that for people. If I have a client who hasn't done homework for the second session in a row, then I will break out what I call a homework contract. So basically, if somebody comes to me at one session and says, I wasn't able to do the homework, and they've got some really valid reason.
Right.
And I say, that's cool. And I show up at the next one with that in my folder waiting to go, right? Because if they say to me, I still wasn't able to do it, and here's my new valid reason, then I just say, here's a contract for you. And we're going to both like assign ourselves some terms. I have terms too. It's got to be homework that you think is realistic. You've got to agree to do it at the end of the session, and then you have to do it. And because I'm coaching business professionals, they take their contracts seriously.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So
multiple sessions. So is that the typical thing? You set up, say, a 6-week session, or what's the time frame that you're...
So right now I have a coaching club, which I'm offering. And I coach on what I call the three keys to communication. And so each of these keys is about a 6-session package. And so people will sign up for the first key or the second key or the third key. But currently I'm doing something called a coaching club where people can sign up for a whole quarter of coaching, so 3 months of coaching, and it's unlimited. So if you want to see me twice a week, you want to see me, because I typically see people about every other week. It's a good rhythm to not overwhelm people and for them to still, you know, get a lot out of the homework and not lose motivation in between sessions. I think it's just a really good pace. So a lot of people will just use that in the coaching club too, but they have the option to say, I need more coaching right now this month. I need to see you every week this month or whatever. And it just gives them, I guess, more control over how often they're seeing me. So I still follow that sequence of about six sessions as I look at each of our goals through the three keys to communication. And I just let them kind of go at their own pace then throughout those three keys.
Gotcha. So the coaching club, it follows the basically 18 sessions, but you can condense them, or can you jump around a little bit?
No, like, jumping around. Yeah, okay. No, because that's this whole like psychological growth part, right? So it follows, follows the old kind of Jungian principles of psychological development. And so, you know, we're trying to, the three keys in a nutshell are, I call them self-honesty, relational honesty, and universal honesty. And what they really translate to are the soft skills of self-awareness, empathy for self and others, and accountability. And so if you employ each of those three principles in all of your communiques, then you're going to be this amazing, stellar communicator. Yeah. My coaching philosophy is, when you are confident, focused, and authentic with your message, you're a magnet to those you wish to attract.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you said at the beginning that you started, before this venture, you were speech coaching and speech writing.
Yes.
So is writing part of what you're coaching them through too?
No, but I will sometimes, right? Well, I will coach them through. I just realized how you worded it. Yes, actually, I will coach them through writing sometimes for sure. And I have a place whenever they do their intake form where it does ask, you know, is it verbal communication, you know, written communication, these kinds of things. So say, for instance, maybe they like are somebody who obsesses over every email and they've got to like, you know, fine tooth comb like every period and comma, right? And like it takes them like 20 minutes to send out one message. And I'm like, okay, this is a time waster, right? We have to figure out how to let that go. Right. We have to figure out how to delegate to someone else. We have to figure out how to be okay with some of these punctuation errors. Or they could be on the other end where they send out all these little misfires, you know, and they're really regretful of what they've sent and we have to like work on. So there can be certain elements of that. And it definitely, if they have, you know, a message they want to put on their website, I can refer them to writers that I have worked with before, that sort of thing. But I personally don't write anymore. I used to do a lot of that and it was fun, but I personally got really tired of finding synonyms for achievement at these awards programs.
That's funny.
It was tough.
Yeah. The whole email thing.
Yeah.
I think.
Are you relating?
Oh yeah, definitely. And not on the obsessing part. Like, I'll look at it once, twice. Okay. It looks good. Okay. And I'll send it out. And then I like, oh man, nothing drastic, but like, oh really? So I can definitely relate to that.
Yeah. I mean, basically I think that most people go in one camp or the other, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like it's so rare to find somebody who's just like, oh no, I'm pretty confident in my email messages, you know? And naturally I used to be on the obsessive end. When I was in my 20s and I worked in the corporate world, I mean, it would take me 20 minutes to send one email message and my, you know, office manager would be like, Keila, what are you doing? How has it taken you so long to accomplish these tasks? You know?
Right.
And I would have to like, I actually had to sit and track. I was doing this great Franklin Covey seminar, right? Trying to figure out how to be more efficient with my time, how to plan things better. And I found that I had some really innate skill sets, but it was that obsessiveness that was really dragging me down and this kind of, you know, compulsion over it. And so I have learned to use these tools to change that. So now I'm in that comfort zone, you know, but I feel like naturally most people aren't in that comfort zone.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes I get stuck, like I'll write, it doesn't necessarily an email, anything, I'll write like I talk and then I'll second guess and like try to overlay this weird grammar thing what I remember from a youth over that. And then it just like gets lost in translation completely. So I think now I try to write more like I talk and just leave it like that and not worry about the crazy grammar and all that other stuff. Like, yeah.
I took a course in college. It was business writing 101, and it was all about the memo and this is pre-email. I mean, this was when we had the information superhighway, right? And so, so it was all about the written memo, you know, and how those things work and trying to have the right tone of voice. And I remember I was going through this thing that semester where I just really wasn't showing up to class. It was my senior year. And my professor pulled me aside. He wanted to have a lunch. And I was like, oh gosh, I'm really going to get called on the carpet because I've been so absent. And he was like, I just want to apologize to you. This class is, must be just way too easy for you because you're acing it from like remote distance, you know? That's funny. I was like, oh yeah, that's what's going on.
Yeah, that's funny. So was it more, just back to that class, was it more the how you speak is it, how you write?
It was,
is that,
yes. Well, okay. No, actually, it was about having a professional tone to your message, right? Okay. So it was about changing that casual voice into a more professional voice and being very clear on your message. And it just happens to be in my wheelhouse. Like, this just happens to be something I am naturally good at.
Yeah.
I am a pretty decent communicator. Don't tell that to my husband or children. But when it comes to using that professional voice, I can kind of squeak it out pretty well. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if someone, like, just a real quick tip, if someone's trying to write better or trying, has a speech coming up, or what is something, one actionable thing that they could do
for which problem? Give me, is it nervousness?
Yeah, I think we'll go with the speech side.
Okay.
Nervous about talking in front of
speaking.
Yeah.
Well, I mentioned how you can convert nervousness to excitement, right? And so they are on the same spectrum, right? Think about roller coasters. Do you like them or hate them, Mark?
I am exhilarated by the thrill of them.
So describe for me what it feels like in your body when you're waiting in line for a roller coaster.
Nervous.
Okay, but
anxious.
What physical sensations?
Stomach turning.
Stomach is turning, right? Okay. You're anticipating those thoughts in your head. Your stomach is turning. Your heart is probably racing, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you're getting a little shaky and sweaty, right?
Sure, definitely.
And in your head, you're thinking, oh my God, this is going to be great, right?
Yeah.
I can't wait to get on this thing, right? It's going to be so crazy. But you're like there's this thrill that's there, okay?
Right.
That's the sensation of excitement, extreme excitement.
Okay.
Okay.
So there's still the nervous, sweaty palms is still excitement.
It's still excitement. So I typically do this like when I have a presentation, I'll ask, you know, everyone who loves roller coasters, raise your hand, and everyone who hates them, raise your hand. And then we describe the same symptoms that are happening, right? And like, you seem to be like, okay, I'm actually liking the fear. Like that's a first that I've heard, right? Because you're like nervous, anxious, but I can't wait, right? So that actually seems like you actually like the fear component. But most maybe that is true for them, but they may not be aware of it as you are, right?
Okay.
So they're just like, I just can't wait to get on it, right? But yeah, I do feel those same symptoms in my body. I dread them, but I have ridden them, but I will like it, right? But as I'm waiting, I'm like nauseated, like, you know, all the butterflies and my heart racing. And I'm like, oh dear God, I hope I live, you know, that's basically, let's just get this over with, you know? But afterward, I'll probably be in the same state that you are, kind of like hysterical happy, right? So nervousness and excitement are on the same spectrum. They're just two different versions, basically positive or negative. And the way the brain and the body responds to them is the same. So there are exercises you can do to actually kind of channel that nervousness into excitement. One is saying like a kind of affirmation statement. There are these new studies right now that show that affirmation statements don't work. Basically, you have to already believe them if you're going to say them. And a lot of people are like, why do I need to say it if I already believe it? Well, here's why. Because you need to remind your brain that there are positive things about what you're thinking about.
Okay.
So I mentioned when I started to give presentations, I was actually very nervous, right? And my thought was, I'm the little girl who wants to sit with her nose in the book in the corner. I don't want to get up here and give a presentation. You know, I'm too short. My voice is too high pitched. And like, I just can't have a stage presence. I had to translate that to the thought behind the thought that triggered me. And my thought was, I'm the invisible girl. You know, I'm not the one who holds the stage. I'm the invisible girl. So I asked my clients to say out loud three times the triggering thought. And if I were to sit here and say, I'm the invisible girl three times, I'd probably start crying. And like, that makes me sad, right? Because it triggers some sort of anxiety in me. And that is what's getting triggered when I would go up in front of people when I first started my coaching practice. Like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this? I'm the invisible girl, right? And so then all that anxiety would get triggered.
So you're actually saying, sorry to interrupt, you're actually saying the negative thing.
So
okay.
This is part of the process when we find what I call the key motto.
Gotcha.
Because this is a great tool that I teach every single 100% of my clients, the key motto. And the key motto is, it's something I've trademarked, and it's actually what I call the affirmation statement on steroids, because it is something you already believe. So it is one of those affirmation statements that does actually work for you. It changes your brain chemistry in the moment. And I'll have people who have been saying their negative thought, right? And their shoulders have slumped and their stomach is sick and their head is down. And sometimes they cry and, you know, and you just have to hold their hand and say, thank you for doing this, right? I'm sorry, this is hard. This is the hard part, but there's a good reason for it. And then whenever we say the key motto that changes their brain chemistry, the smile comes to their face, the tears dry up, the shoulders go back, the head goes up. All the nausea in the stomach goes away. And so we see right there, the brain chemistry has shifted and we've cycled out of fight or flight. My key motto, because I had to walk through this process for myself, right? I told you I use all my tools. Right. I know they work this way, right? My key motto is actually, I am petite and I'm powerful. And when I say it, I just want to put my hands on my hips and imagine a cape flying behind myself like a superhero. You know, I'm petite and I'm powerful. Because my thought process was, well, my message is powerful and I created it, so I must have some power to me. And short, well, yes, that's true. I have to embrace that. But petite sounds prettier than short. So sure. I'll just say I'm petite and I'm powerful. And it really does make me feel good. Like it really does this for me, right? So one thing people can do is find their key motto. Something else they can do if that's a little hard for them because it is a little, you know, a kind of an advanced exercise, is they can just do this with me, okay? We're putting our hands. This is an audio, so we're going to really try and demonstrate this for people. We're going to put our hands in front of us at about our bellies.
Okay.
And we're going to kind of like steeple our fingers, kind of like the old Mr. Burns excellent, right? But we're doing it with our thumbs touching and all of our fingertips touching. So it's almost like a little diamond shape we're making.
Okay.
And then we're just going to kind of push our hands together and pull them apart. And if you were to turn your hands sideways, it would look like a spider doing push-ups on a mirror, right? But you've got them kind of pointing out so that when your fingers are steepled, they're pointing away from your body. We may have to put some sort of video element for this. But I actually don't know the name of this, but this is an old drama trick, right? This is something that artists and you're going to see musicians and singers and performers doing like on American Idol, like warming up, these kinds of things backstage, because this is something that's been around in like the vaudevillian industry of entertainment forever. This is a trick that harnesses that energy, pushes it out there. Like you're literally focusing on doing that, because if you keep it kind of at your belly, that's your solar plexus that connects to the world, right? And so you're just kind of channeling this energy. And if you're saying your motto at the same time as you're doing these kinds of spider push-ups, as my drama club teacher used to call them in high school, then you are channeling that energy and changing your brain chemistry. And so I would do this and I'd be saying, I'm petite and I'm powerful. I'm petite and I'm powerful. And I literally feel a difference in my brain when I do that and say this. And what I tell people too is, you know, if you're doing this around Northwest Indiana, you can be sitting at a table, doing it under the table. You know, you can be in the bathroom for a second doing it, you know, in the stall. And it's just like something you can do before you have to give that presentation that reminds yourself, you know what, I've got this. Nervousness can be changed to excitement.
That's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. That's very good. And now that you've said it, it makes sense, but the whole nervous, sweaty palm thing, it can be on two sides of the spectrum there.
It totally can, which is interesting because, you know, our brain goes, uh-oh, this is something I'm supposed to be afraid of. And so it sends out that signal that says either freeze, right, or fight. I've got these two options, or either run or fight, right? And then freeze is the third option that we can do either as a means of springing out to attack or hiding to save ourselves, right? So it's still in that fight or flight choice. But what happens a lot of times now that we're evolved and our lives aren't typically being threatened on a daily basis is freeze is what our brain chooses, right? Because I'm like, I don't know if I'm supposed to fight or flee. So I'm just going to freeze. And then you're like, get tongue tied, or you say the wrong thing, you speak too quickly, like whatever. Those are the types of experiences that we have. And then we regret them later. And we're like, you know, self-critical and all these things, because really we're just not realizing that our brain thinks we're being attacked and we're not.
Right.
Our lives are not at stake.
And the unknowing in your head makes you freeze.
Exactly. Because, you know, the unknown is supposed to be dangerous. We're supposed to like be on the alert because there could be a saber-toothed tiger or poison berries. Right. And so like to survive, you've got to really be looking for those things. You've got to be, uh-oh, danger, danger. This is new territory. And so like our bodies naturally get triggered by fight or flight whenever we approach any unknown situation. So that's where the business owner who's had his company for 10 years suddenly goes into a new market and goes, oh my gosh, I feel like a kid in my 20s starting out again because, you know, I've never attacked this market and I don't know how to address them and I don't know if I'll win it, you know, and I want to fight this market. But wait, I can't fight the market. I'm confused.
And just from what you said about my reaction to the roller coaster, like in business, that's the most exciting part for me.
Oh, as I've that. Been that's really cool.
As I've been starting businesses, launching businesses. Okay. Like once something's up and running,
it gets boring to you.
Yes.
And you have to learn to stay with it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is another skill you can learn. It's all right. Soft skills, right?
Right.
And what's cool is we used to think like a soft skill was like either you have it or you don't. You know, like I'm naturally confident. He's naturally confident, whatever. I'm naturally not, whatever.
Right.
And, you know, now we know that these things are just things that can be learned too. We can change our learning brains and teach them all throughout our lives.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
It is. That's, and I don't know why that just clicked in my head, but the I don't know. You
that's
said
cool.
I was excited
I
about the fear.
Very self-aware in this interview.
It is. It was. That's very cool. So in the last 8 years, so actually just take a step back. It's just you, right?
It's just me. That's okay. Right.
So in the last 8 years, is there anything that you've figured out in recent years that you would have figured out 8 years ago, 7 years ago, six years ago?
No, because it's all changing right now. And it's
okay.
It's interesting. The coaching industry is changing very much. There's a huge mix of coaches who coach coaches. And that stuff is driving me nuts. I'm telling you, LinkedIn, all I get on LinkedIn now are coaches trying to coach me. And I'm like, you know, I used to like sharing referrals with coaches, but I don't like you just trying to coach me because sure, there's a lot of stuff that I don't know, but I feel like there's this huge like push right now for coaches to have like a funnel and to really do this.
Right.
And this is the thing, I'm transitioning to a national space in addition to Northwest Indiana. And so it's like the worst time to get into a national space because I'm not going to try and coach coaches. Like that's not, that does not appeal to me. I don't mind coaching coaches on confidence and the things that are in my wheelhouse, but I'm not trying to create a big national program to funnel coaches into so they can grow their practice and be successful because that's not what I'm looking at, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it's all changing to me. It's very interesting. And I used to do a lot of in-person networking in Northwest Indiana, and I scaled back a couple of years ago because I've had two kids in my 40s, and so my life has completely upended.
Kids will do that.
Completely.
Doesn't matter what age, kids will
right,
do that.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I, you know, I kind of thought I knew what I was doing, which is the best laughable part, you know, like, oh, I'm stable. I can have kids now. Crazy. So, after that explosion, I sort of scaled back just so that I could have more time with the kiddos while they're young because they're 4 and 1 right now. But I've been hearing from people I am still connected to because I do still network, but just not as traditionally like with the networking groups and chamber things. And so I'm hearing that whole milieu is changing as well. And that the way it's done is a lot more like this online thing, more person to person, more mastermind groups, which I am a part of one. And so it's interesting. Like it just seems like this world just changes about every 3 or 4 years. It's like it sheds its skin in the business. And that was starting to happen in 2008. And there were a lot of people in fight or flight, like what's happening. And now it's like, we're trying to figure out like, this is the new normal. Like we just live like this all the time with this low level fear in our brains.
Yeah. I mean, there's some truth
to that.
Which
you're thriving on apparently.
I don't know about thriving on that part of it, but I think definitely the 08 made people realize that even if their so-called secure jobs aren't secure, and I think that's should be the impetus of people going out and doing other things. You can have a job, but you need to not rely on your job necessarily. You need to go out and figure out some other stuff, whether it's a hobby you turn into a business or this that you turn into some kind of monetization, because that security isn't like it used to be. You don't start at a job at 17 anymore and retire
and
at 70.
Right? I know. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's fascinating because that was the model for hundreds of years. Well, over 100 years, right? And so that was the model. And then, you know, for that to have completely shifted in less than a decade and then to not know, I mean, I really feel like I'm in my 40s when I say this, you know, like to not know what's coming around the corner, you know, it's a whole different world.
Yeah.
But it's very fascinating to me. So it's hard for me to say, like, here's what I would have done that,
right.
you know, that I've learned
recently. evolving so quickly.
I don't think it would have applied back then, even right. just 8 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree with that on everything that I do.
It's, right.
You know, I can say that I wish I was involved in this 2 years ago, but this didn't exist 2 years ago.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know.
Yeah.
And the whole coaching, coaches trying yeah. to coach you coaching is interesting because now everybody wants to teach you how to write a book on how to write a book.
Totally. Like, oh, totally.
I'll teach you how to write a book, and then they tell you that you're going to write a book about others writing a book.
Hey, pretty soon you can start a podcast that teaches how to do podcasts.
There's already some
awesome.
Out there.
I bet.
There's already multiple ones out there. Because I think people just get on the bandwagon right. and they see the opportunity cost of the business to business versus the business to consumer.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. No, yeah. it's true. And then to me, it's like the housing bubble. Like if everybody's doing it, it's going to burst soon. And so I don't want right. to be a part of that.
Right. Right. And that goes back to having something on the side for your security. You know, you can't just have tunnel vision and go down the same path the whole time. You have right. to be looking in your peripheral at all times right. trying to figure out, okay, if this track is blocked, I need to be able to jump to this track.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. It's definitely an interesting dynamic in the business
really
world.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. And I do like, though, how accessible the national space is now. I mean, it's kind of that part is great timing for me, right?
Yeah.
Because of things like podcasts and just things I can put on my mm-hmm. website, like just having these virtual components, you know?
Right.
It's so, that's so great. And so yeah. I'm really grateful for that. Yeah. Because yeah. that was just not as easy. And now it's just the norm.
Definitely.
So, yeah. In less than a decade, that has hugely yeah. changed.
Yeah. And you mentioned the mastermind. I'm a part of a mastermind mm-hmm. where the guy that leads it is in Washington State, and there's people all over the U.S., Canada, and actually one guy in our group is in New Zealand. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
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 That's very cool.
It's definitely a global market versus a local market.
For sure.
On some of this stuff. Cool. So, book, podcast, seminar, anything that you've attended that's recently given you an aha?
I like this question. So, I am reading this great book on neuroplasticity called You Are the Placebo by Dr. Joe Dispenza. And he has a very interesting story where back in the 80s when he was in his early 20s and launching his chiropractic clinic, he was in a triathlon and he was doing the bike portion and he was hit by an SUV and he broke like 3 vertebrae in his back. Yeah. And he was told, you know, they were pulverized apparently. And he was told it was deadly. And he did this very important back surgery immediately. And he would probably never walk again. And he just was like, no. And yeah. I don't know all the details of this personal story because he sure. hasn't shared that part of it as much, but he just kind of summarized. But he apparently he said part of it was maybe just being bold in 23, but he just said,
stubborn.
Yeah, he just said, you know, I don't think I'm going to agree with that. And he camped out on a friend's couch for 2 months and spent 3 hours a day visualizing his body healing. And he has gone on to, you know, he's in his 50s now and he's gone on to create these workshops all around the world where he teaches brain changing exercises and neuroplasticity and change of brain chemistry that supposedly they're quantifying at a cellular level. And there are people who are, you know, the concept of placebo is so fascinating, right? I mean, if you look at these FDA studies, like placebos usually work at least 40% of the time. So if a drug can work 41% of the time, it's effective, right?
Right.
And so he said, you know, why are we not paying attention to the power in the placebo? It's the human mind that really is the placebo. And it's got a lot of great stats about neuroplasticity that I love to absorb that stuff.
Yeah, that's
so
pretty
it's
cool.
a really cool book.
You Are the Placebo.
That's right.
Cool. Yeah, that's that kind of stuff, that so-called fringe stuff
yeah.
fascinates me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's so interesting to me because it's the stuff I work on a very realistic day-to-day basis, right? And so this is one of those things that in my head I've always been like, yeah, sure, positive thinking. Of course I buy into it. I teach it, right? And I live it on a regular basis. But to really change yourself from disease, from long-term mm-hmm. things, you know, I'm a little bit on the balderdash side when I weigh in on that.
Right.
But listening to the stats behind this and correlating it to what I have seen in people
right.
and things I have experienced, I'm like, you know, I'm really buying into some of this. It's very fascinating.
Yeah, there's definitely, there's multiple stories out there, whether it's broken bones, disease, whatever.
Right.
Just getting in the mindset to overcome it versus just, okay, this is what you told me, so I'm going to subside by that.
Yes, right? Yes. Yeah. Well, and there's one thing. I wish, I really thought this would have gotten more traction than it has. A good decade or so ago, I got this great book called The Worst Is Over, The Art of Verbal First Aid, I believe is what they called it. And I'm blanking on their names. It was two nurses who were trained in emergency response. And they had started this system where they were teaching emergency responders to say these phrases to people because they had seen people who were calmer, people who weren't in emergency or in fight or flight themselves, they would stop bleeding. They would do these things. They would do these regenerative things for their bodies. And so, you know, I mean, it's so funny because it's like I hadn't thought about that book, but I believed in that. You know, like you could change it just by helping and saying the right thing and getting somebody to calm down, right? I definitely believe in that because it's stopping the fight or flight. So it's interesting because he's basically just saying this is the same thing. Right. And, you know, in certain cases, you can actually do away with interventions and protocols, you know, and that's the part that I really go, really, you know, but he does, he's a doctor. So he's like, I'm not trying to get rid of the medical community. Trust me.
Right.
I mean, he's a chiropractic doctor, but he's a doctor and he's, he's definitely a critical thinker.
Yeah. And I think in reading, I think definitely being able to not just look at your own industry or your own thing and being able to go outside of it helps your industry and helps you in your industry being able to see the other things. So that's
absolutely
awesome.
I'm always drawing from anything on neuroplasticity. It just really amazes me. And
yeah,
I need to talk to my sinuses, don't I?
No worries.
The worst is over, sinuses.
So outside business, outside a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, anything that occupies your time?
So loving to read, definitely. Travel with my family whenever I can. We went out to Colorado this summer and we took the kiddos. This was actually pretty crazy. We took them to a 1-room cabin on the side of the mountain, 40 acres of land. And we took the minivan up this little non-existent road. We were like, we're the craziest parents right now. But it was so fun. And it was this tiny little space and it was just so fun to have all of us in it together. And then this vast space for them to play in. And I mean, we had to be worried about mountain lions, you know? And so it was like, okay, don't go out at night by yourself. And we didn't go out at night at all. And then it was don't go out by yourself during the day, you know?
That's cool.
It was
though.
Really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. To have the different experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So is there anything that we didn't touch on that you want to, talk about?
I would love to tell people that I am starting something because the coaching club I mentioned, you know, which is the unlimited and it's got all these great components, but it's time intensive for people and it's also an investment. And so I'm launching something that's only $37 a month subscription and it is a coaching call once a week. And so much easier access, participate or not participate. It's like the group coaching workshops where somebody will get kind of, you know, their chance in the hot seat to really talk about things and everyone gets a chance to kind of help and share. And
so it's a group call?
Teach each other. It's a group call. That's right. And if people are interested in that, they can just go to my website and sign up for my newsletter and I'll be sharing more information soon because we're just getting that launched. So
cool.
Yeah.
So on that note, just to wrap up, what is the website, Facebook? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Okay. So going to the website, coachkiki.com. So K-I-K-I. That's easier for people to remember than Kila a lot of times. So I am Coach Kiki. And going to that website and just either subscribing to the newsletter. There's a contact form. You can email me there. ask@coachkiki.com is the way to reach me directly. And I respond pretty quickly.
Awesome. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Mark. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.